up.
So, Rabbi, I wanted to share with you my personal feelings of disappointment with my audience. Okay? Not very happy with you at the moment. Sorry. I'll tell you why. I told you a halacha on Wednesday and started illustrating it with a story, but because my time was up, we never got to the punchline. And we said, we'll carry on tomorrow. And everybody said, oh, like, we need to know. We want to know what's the end of the story. Yeah? And everybody came yesterday to the shir. Not one person said, what's the end of the story? Can you tell us, can you finish off the story, please? And in fact, not only did you forget about the story, I forgot about the story. And then last night I went to an engagement and I met Wednesday's speaker, Rabbi Ellenson, and he said to me, oh, by the way, he said, nice story. And I said, what story? Oh, he said, the story that you said in your locker beforehand. Oh yeah, that's the one, I didn't finish it. Okay, so I thought I'd just tell you, yeah, we were speaking about somebody who's criticizing someone else because they don't allow their son to go out, they're too fussy, and therefore they're denying their son the opportunity of going on a shidduch, etc., etc. So I started telling you the story about the lady who heard Rabbi Krohn speaking about boys marrying girls who are older than them, and he encouraged them that they should consider it. And the lady came up to him a year later, and she said, you remember last year that you suggested that parents should be more flexible, and they should consider, even if the girl is older and the boy is younger, nevertheless, well, we were in that situation. We've got the son, and we'd been offered a girl who was 24 years old, and he was 22, and we'd refused the shidduch basically on the grounds that she was too old. And after the shi'ah, I went and spoke to my husband and said, maybe doch, and Baruch Hashem, the shidduch happened. So that's as far as we got in the story on Wednesday. What's the end of the story? Just a punchline, because Rabbi Krohn, when he tells these stories, okay, it would be very nice on its own. But this one has a punchline as well. What is it? She said to him, do you remember, Rabbi Krohn, that when you spoke last year, you mentioned that Rabbi Shemshon Rafal Hirsch married a young lady, who was 4 years older than he was. And he was very eligible, and there were a lot of people after him. And his friends asked him, why are you marrying a girl who's 4 years older than you are? And his answer was, because for the work that I've got planned for my life, I need somebody mature. I can't marry a little girl. That's what he said. He said, I've got my work cut out. I need to marry a lady who's mature. And therefore, he was quite happy to marry a girl who was 4 years older than him. This was one of the stories that Rabbi Krohn told in his initial drosha in order to encourage. Said the lady to him, as a result of that drosha, in which you mentioned Rabbi Shimshon Rafal Hirsch, my daughter got engaged. Said, a few weeks before the chasna, we were sitting down with the mechotonim, and we were working out the nusach of the invitation, and it turned out that my son-in-law, the one who's now my son-in-law, who we refused to consider, is actually a direct descendant of Rabbi Shimshon Rafal Hirsch. Yeah, Ben Achabas or something like that. His surname is not Hirsch, so it's not Ben Achaben all the way, but a direct descendant. So that was the punchline of the story. End of story. Says the Chofetz Chaim, one more example before we move on, and that is all these situations of sitting around the chasna table, the bar mitzvah table, and speaking. So you've got Reuven who's speaking at the chasna table, and the discussion is about bad parking. And Reuven says, I've got a neighbor who drives me absolutely mad, right? Shimon, my neighbor, he's got a van for his business, yeah? And not only does he park his van right up to my driveway, but he parks it half across my driveway. When I'm trying to get out of my drive, I can't squeeze past. And if I can squeeze past, I can't see who's coming, you know, etc. It's mamash sakona. I've told him 1,000 times about it. 1,000 times about it, and he doesn't do anything about it. That's pure Lashon Hara. Okay, so this guy's speaking, I say okay, it's not okay, but he's speaking Lashon Hara to his friends. So one of his friends at the table, Levi, pipes up and says, I agree with you, it's disgusting. I've got no words. Fine. So then, the story comes back. that Shimon, who he was talking about, heard that there was a discussion about him at the Shabbat, at the Chasna table, and he goes up to Reuven, his neighbor, and he says, "It's disgusting. How? What right have you got to speak about me at the Chasna and to tell everybody about bad parking? You know, if you want, you can speak to me, but you've got no right to spread it around." In which he happens to be absolutely right, although he's in the wrong. Yeah. So what does Shimon do in order to protect himself? He says, "Well, Levi was at the table, and Levi also agreed with me, and so was Yehuda at the table, and Yehuda was on my side, and everybody thinks that you're disgusting." Yeah, so that, we said, would be Rechilus now, because he's creating enmity. He says the Chofetz Chaim, but what happens if Levi is his biggest enemy? It's his brother-in-law, and they've been fighting over Yerusha for years. And when he mentions Levi, he says, "Don't mention his name in my presence. He's disgusting, that piece of..." etc. So he says, Levi is filth. He says, "Don't even mention him. You know, you bring him in support, disgraceful person, out of the question." Yeah. So says the Chofetz Chaim, so therefore maybe there's no rechilus there, because you can't make him more of an enemy than he was already. We say that rechilus is when you're creating enmity. Rechilus is when you're creating animosity. Rechilus is when you're creating a situation where somebody will reflect badly on someone else, and therefore they will become enemies, or they will become people who don't agree with each other, at least, yeah? So here, he's his biggest enemy anyway, says the Chofetz Chaim, to increase even one iota of enmity or animosity makes it into Rechilus. So it's not only Lashon Hara, it becomes Rechilus as well, and even though they're already the biggest enemies in the world, Af al pi ken, it remains Osa.
Start your day the Turnway, Northwest London, Friday, Kof Zayin Tammuz, 2nd of August, not as advertised, the Dudi Rosenberg Pasha themes. Yeah. Victoria is sponsored by Nishmas for us, Martha Bus from there, Rapport, and Shalom, and the 30th.
Yeah, special appreciation to Dudi. I think he had a few hours' notice, literally.
Did you have any notice? I found out this morning at 6:01 that there's no Magichia, and I had my usual Chavrisa, so I haven't had a chance to prepare, but whatever we come from memory, we will try to apply, and I shall help from Siat Deshmai. Right, so there we have Pash of Matos. Matos is the Sigi of Nadurim. Nadurim is the Sigi of people that say something. So, famous proverbial, "Sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me." Never was a greater fallacy expressed before. It's a load of baloney. Yeah, there's nothing that hurts a person and wounds them more deeply than words, because broken bone heals, but sometimes people carry in themselves effects of comments that were made, even within family, for years, decades, and never heal from them. But this is Agoyish HaShkufa. Who said it? George Bernard Shaw, I think, no? Anyway, the mass is, the word is Riach Memalalu. The word that comes out of a person's mouth is the mamish, the koyach, which the Bunshna made, the difference and distinction between man and beast. And that Riach Memalalu, the gift of speech, is something which is treasured to be guarded. You walk along the street and we see, talk is cheap. Yeah? Talk is cheap? Question of how much you can undercut the price of telephones.
Depends which company you're with. Oh,
that's right. So whatever it is, they all vie to say talk is cheap. But we say, "Kechol la yoitzei mipiv yase loy yachail devuroi." Don't make your words chen. The words which are a gift from the Rebbein Shlodam, every word is to be treasured. And effectively, you see from the beginning of the Pasha that the person that says a neder can create a heftze, is a heftze on something just by the words that he's pronounced. And that is mamish effectively showing you the impact and the ramification of the word. Lo yachal devuroi k'chol ha'yoitz mepiv yaseh. It's just an introduction to the concept of neder and shvir and issa, which the Torah speaks about. But the master, let's move on from there, because there's a more familiar part of the parsha, which is known as the war against Midyan. Why Midyan? Why not Moav? Who are the culprits? Who went in? And who sent in the young ladies? Bullock was the king. He was Melech Moav. Actually, it was really a Midianite, but he defected. And it says, Vayuchel Om Liznois im Benois Moav. And notice after that, you've got the Nekida of that the one who was the culprit, namely a lady called Cosby Bastur. Maybe she wasn't so quite such a lady after all. Roish Beis of B'midyon. Who? So therefore you see that it was meant as a play, one against the other. Who was it really? But the Torah says, Nekoyim Likas Menais Humais HaMidyonim. Maybe because they were trying to cover for Moav, because Moav had Risa Moaviyu and wants to look after her. Rashi brings him. On the other hand, maybe that the Midyonim were busy poking their nose into affairs which don't belong to them. After all, it wasn't a war against Midyan. Moav was scared because Yidden were going to trample on their property and they were going to overtake them, going to destroy them. So what was the message? Aibish to said to Moshe Rabbeinu, the koim niknas b'nai yisru b'nai yisra medyune. And then it says, interessante sach, Moshe Rabbeinu, and I want to just be highlight this Rashi, because Rashi says, v'adabai Moshe elhu om lai moya. So Rashi says, afal pi, notwithstanding the fact, sheshuma, that he heard, shemisusoy teluyo b'dovo, that his demise was dependent on this war, and promptly afterwards, he would pass on to a better world. Nonetheless, says Rashi, Usu besimcho, he did it with alacrity, with joy. Veloy icha, and he did not try to delay this war. Shein Rashi. Levi nimmt es Rashi. Where does Rashi take this? How do you know that he did it besimcho? Ah, besimcho. A lot of people ask the same question. Oh, so you say V'yimosi, but that's V'yimosi is to do with the Eden, not with Moshe. Emes? Question is, how do you know Moshe did the Besimcha? So let's go in. These few couple of psikim that follow now are loaded, power-packed. So let's just go with the text. The text says that the Boyin Shalom instructed Moshe. What did he say? L'koyim niknas b'nai Yisrael me'eisa medyunim. The vengeance is one for the Jews. What did Moshe say to the people? Hecholzi ma'itchem anushim atzuvu. Go and prepare an army. Lu says, Nikmas Hashem b'midyon. Is that what Eibishter said? No. Eibishter said, Nikmas b'nai Yisur. And now, Moshe is repetition, is telling them that it's really Nikmas Hashem. Therein lies a very, very profound thought. Why? There are two parts to this vengeance. When the Eden suffered this terrible calamity of 24,000, casualties at the hands of the Benois Moav, because that's what the Magaifu claimed in the end, there was a sin which was committed on two fronts. A, against the Reboin Shloilom, because clever Bilam, wily Bilam, sinister Bilam created this plan, and he said, "Kayem shall idly is soinai zimu he." This Rebbein Shlom loves purity, hates promiscuity, and now I'm giving you the key factor. That's the Achilles tendon. Go in there with the girls, and that'll sort the problem. And that's exactly what he did, and he was right. But it was against the Rebbein Shalom, because the Rebbein Shalom is takis soine zimu. And the vengeance now is, you created sin, you created bad, you created tarnish in the world. This is iniquities. That's the nikmas. That's part of one nekuma. The second nekuma is very clearly obvious. Klal Yisrael suffered 24,000 casualties, and they fell as a consequence of this master that they sent in the Benois Moav. So there's two fronts to this vengeance. One of them is Nikmas Hashem, like we explained, which is the fact that they caused a virus to be committed within the realms of promiscuity. Two, Nikmas Yisur, which is something where they had to take vengeance because you actually caused the death of 24,000 Eden. We are going to take revenge and we're going to take vengeance on this. Moshe Rabbeinu heard instructions from the Rebbein Shlom. Moshe Rabbeinu heard the following. The vengeance which I want is Nikmas B'nai Yisur. Eibishter just says, I know what was committed against me, but my primary concern is Vaydaber Hashem El Moshe Laimah Lekoim Nikmas B'nai Yisur El Ma'is HaMedyunim. Mich Tidvai, what does it hurt me? What grieves me, says the Rebbein Shlom, Nikmas B'nai Yisur, what happened to the Yiddish kinder? And then afterwards you will go and be gathered to your people. Moshe Rabbeinu said he knows what the outcome will be. If he presents this to the Eden and he says to the Eden, you should know that I am instructed by the Rebbein Shlolem to avenge Nikmas B'nai Yisrael. Then the Eden will say, yeah, but there's a clause here. Immediately after the war, you are going to go to a better world. Chapnesh. What's the rush? We'll go to war. A year, 2 years' time, 3 years' time, 5 years' time. We want to hold on to Moshe Rabbeinu, and therefore, as far as our covert is concerned, Nikmas B'nai Yisur will put that on hold. Moshe Rabbeinu knew that, and he substituted the word Nikmas Hashem. And he said those words, Vaydabe Moshe Elu'om. What did he relate to them? Hecholzime Yitchem Anushim Latzuvu. Now he turned it from Nikmas B'nai Yisur to Nikmas Hashem. You can't argue with that, guys. You can't fight the kuvud of the Rebbein Shlomo. And therefore they had no choice, and that was why Reb Shimon says, Vayimasri, that they went Shkat Kambreire, and they went to war. So now we understand Rashi. We asked the question, how did we know from Russia? Says very simply, notwithstanding the fact that he knew that his death was pending on this. Usa besimcha, he did it with joy and with alacrity. Veloy icha, and did not delay the matter. How do you know he did it besimcha? And the answer is like we've just explained. He could have just repeated the Eibishter's words. And he would have said, Nikmas B'nai Yisur. Went Moshe and he knew what the outcome would be, and he changed it. And he said, Nikmas Hashem. And therefore, the Eden had no choice. Therefore, Vayimosri. Point one. Verstanden? Yes. Two is another one which is in the words of Vayimosri. Another famous Rashi. Rashi says there, Loidiachu Shevuchon Shel Roya Yeshua. To tell Roya Yisrael, Shevuchon, to tell you Shevuchon, the praise of the Jewish shepherd, the Jewish shepherd, that he's looking after these sheep, so to speak, Ad Shelo Yishomu B'Misusai, till they didn't hear about his impending death. Mahi Oimeh, Rashi says, what did they say, or what did he say, more likely, Moshe Rabbeinu? Oidem at iskulini. It means he's saying to the Rebbein Shlolem, I am in danger of a doom of being stoned to death. This is what this people is capable of. They can actually kill me. They can actually stone me. I accept now, like we highlighted just before, that as soon as they heard that, what? That Moshe Rabbeinu is going to die after this particular war, what was the result? They declined to go, they didn't really want to go. Nimsri al kochon. That's the solution from Vayimosru. Shkabraira, you have to go to war, even though you don't want to. So question asked now, what was the tachlis of Russia introducing part one? Why was it necessary for Rashi to say over here that if you want to describe the Shevuchon Shel Roya Yisrael, Kamu Hem Chavive, and you introduce part one, which is You know, there was a place where Klal Yisrael were at an abyss where they were actually threatening Moshe, and Moshe said to the Rebbein Shlomo, it's hit and miss that they're going to take me and stone me to death. Why would you mention this now? If you want to speak about Chavivim and Al Yisrael, then just mention the last part. And now you see that Moshe Rabbein is going to be taken away, and they didn't want to go to war by Yimasu. Would have been adequate. Vusot Oskefeld, why was it necessary to introduce part one of Russia? Das ist die Frage. So they say that there could be one of two reasons that people behave towards leadership in a certain way. So let's go understand. We've all had children tug at our trousers and our jackets when we went to the fun fair, and they wanted to have the bunny rabbit, or they wanted to have the teddy bear, or they wanted to have the popcorn, or they wanted to, and they didn't give it to them. You're a bad daddy. I hate you. You don't give me what I want. You are a terrible daddy. And then at night, they're sitting down together, and the little boy is creaking all over his father, and he's kissing him. Daddy, I love you, the best. Well, 1 minute, only a couple of hours ago, I was the worst daddy in the world. You hated my guts, and you told me that all your friends have got better daddies than me, so what happened? Teretz is because maybe that's the way children behave. And they believe that leadership is such that you have to deliver the goods. Moshe Rabbeinu, where's the bread? Ma'on min ha-shamayim. Moshe Rabbeinu, where's the water? Ba'ayim min ha-uretz. Moshe Rabbeinu, mekan ha-clouds. And so it went on through every trial and tribulation throughout the Midbar. Where they needed something, they tugged at his trousers and they say, deliver the goods. Bistat tata. So the point that Moshe Rabbeinu turned around to the Eibishter and he says, He unoichi hurisi esu om hazeh, he unoichi yelidati, did I carry, conceive, and hold this child, this Jewish nation, in my womb, and did I give birth to them, that they should have these demands on me as a child to a father? And the Teretz says, yeah, because that's how child to a father behaves. I believe you have to deliver the goods. And when you don't, you are falling short of fatherhood. That's one way of looking at it. The other way would be plain and simple. Labour, conservative, Rishi Sunak, Havdle Lefavdulas, Schlag soll ihm treffen, let him go to. And thank God the Labour is coming in. Good riddance to bad rubbish. And the leaders, let them all go. They've performed like a bunch of clowns for 20 years. And that's the end of it. Send them all to the dust heap. That's how you feel about leaders? Yeah. And when the Labour got in, hey, they're out. No? So then you show your true colours. So Rashi. There is the question which is facing you. What actually were the qualifications of Moshe Rabbeinu's leadership? When they said that they brought the place to a pinnacle where they spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu when he thought he was going to be stoned to death, could have been understood on two ways. Either that they looked towards him and they disliked him intensely, and then they thought that this is a bad leader and he's falling short of leadership, or no, they look towards him like a father, and fathers have to deliver the goods, and if you don't deliver the goods, then we pull and scream and shout and we say we'll stone you. When's the acid test? When do you know the real answer? At which point is it clear? Because when the Rebbein Shalom says Acha Teusef Alamechu, Moshe Rabbeinu is going now to pass on to a better world, you know exactly where you stand. How are they going to react? If it was good riddance, like we said before, they say, let him die. Very good. Let's go to war and get it over with and let's see who the next one is. But they didn't want to. Vayimosru ba'al-kochon. It's a simon that even when they behaved towards him in a way that looked like they were going to stone him, that the acid test was now at the part and the time of his demise, and potentially he's going to pass on to a better world. And they said, let's delay the war. What's the rush? We want to hold on to Moshe. We want him as our leader. We want him as our father. What did you say before? He said, Oid mateskulini? Yeah. That's the way children behave to parents sometimes, but because they believe that there's a deep relationship and a demand. But now you have proof of the fact that the love and the bond, and now you understand Russia in both parts. Lohidiacho. It says Vayimosu, that they gave over themselves, so to speak, Bal Kocho. Shvuchon Sholayroiswell, we can see the Shvach here at this point. When we knew the Achet Yusuf Alamecho of the Roy Yisrael, Kamoim Chavivim Al Yisrael, how beloved they are to the Jewish nation. At Sheloi Shomu B'Misusoi, until they didn't hear about his impending death, Mahi Oime, they said, Oid Matis Kulini. Was that a reflection that they didn't want him? No, because you can see Mishe Shomi, when they heard, Shemisas Moshe Teluyo B'Nikmas Midyon, then what happened? There was a defiance, they felt a resistance, a hesitation. There was here a sort of a dilemma, because they didn't really want to go to war if they knew that Moshe Rabbeinu is going. They had to go to war because the Eibishter doesn't heißen gewinnig bas Hashem. That's the second Heurin Rashi. You know, there are some interesting heures on the Kiddo of Neder, which I just wanted to bring by way of two short stories. The first story was Rav Meir Shapir. This was recorded when he was Reuven Lublin. He was before, he was Reuven Sunik, and he was also Reuven Pietrikov, and he was Reuven another small town before he became Reuven of Lublin. But when he was appointed, he had a curiosity to go through the archives and to see the writings, the historical writings of all the Rabbunim before him. One of them was the famous Marshal. And the Marshal had recorded in the books of Lublin, which Rabbi Shapira had actually revealed, that there was once a man in Lublin who was married to a lady who unfortunately became very ill, and he was very young, not long after the Chasana. And what happened was that she was on her deathbed and they had no children. And while they were speaking to each other, and it looked like it was a question of, it was imminent, the end of her life, the doctors didn't give any hope. She was not the most of enlightened of women, but nonetheless, as they were sitting and they were speaking, they had a very good relationship. And the wife says to the husband, make me promise.
Make me?
A promise. What is it? When I die, I don't want you to marry anybody else. Our relationship should go on, and our love for eternity, we should have a close bond, and you'll always remember me. And he sees her there, Nebuch lying, so vulnerable. So he thought, I don't want to upset her. And he made a commitment and says, okay, I promise you. A couple of weeks went by, Chmun Ritzlon, and she went on to a better world. Shrap Ramay Shapira, he says, this is what he saw in the archives. He says, apparently, after the Levaya, the man was in despair. He was a young man. And he thought to himself, I'm going to spend the rest of my life celibate. It's unlikely. So therefore, I want to remarry. But I know what I've told my late wife. So he went and he asked the Marshal if he can speak to him. Marshal welcomed him in and he told the Marshal the whole story. And he says he's in a predicament. Marshal said to him, you know what? Ulaiv al tzavuri. No worry. Go out, get married, find another wife. And Tuva Yileh Chabuch, don't worry. The Marshal said, so he went out and looked for another wife. A few months later, he suggested for him another young woman, and actually he got married. Once he got married, it was 3 days into the Sheva Buchos, and our Chusin dies. Suddenly. And there was a great uproar in the town. Terrible tragedy. First of all, he lost his wife. Then he got remarried. 3 days after he got married, he died. And the Marshal knew the background of the story. And the Marshal went and called the Chevra Kedisha. Called the Chevra Kedisha in and he said to him, I want you to listen to the following stipulations I'm making. When you go and you make the Tahara, I want you to insert into his hand this piece of paper, which I've written. So I'll share with you that on the piece of paper was written, Ani, Shloim Huria, Marshal wrote, Goize al Bezen in Shumayim, that because this man fulfilled the Das Chachomim and he listened to the Psak, and the Marshal writes down Rush Psukim that there was a Pesach Harut and it was a Neder, but in Enmison, he made the condition because he just thought he wanted to pacify his wife, but really deep in his heart he would have never made this neder had he known that this was a kam. And with the Shalat Shivas, very briefly on what the base of Psak was made, and on the back of that I have written that he should go and remarry, and I'm goizer that min hashemayim this person should be granted life again. Sealed it, signed it, and Chevra Kedisha put it into his hand. They lowered it into the grave, and upon the instruction,
should he be granted? What should he be granted?
He should be granted life.
Life?
Life. And then, when you put him into the ground, he instructed the Chevra Kedisha, let it be known to you. Do not make stima sagol. Just leave the grave open, put him down, and you'll go away like Chevra Kedisha do from the Bais Oilam, and people will make a bit of a noise, but eventually they'll follow you. And Kachav, that's exactly what they did. It was 3 hours after the Levaya, and Yankee, this fellow, is walking around the town of Lublin with his Tachlichim. This is recorded by Rabbi Shapira from the Marshal. And of course, people were scared to death. Forgive the pup. But not only that, he went into Shil to Dav Mincha with his Tachrichim, and people ran out of the shul, so they was left without the minion. And then he came home to his wife, and she screamed and ran out of the house too. And the guys, and first of all, they gave him a suit to put on that he should look like a mensch instead of walking around in shroud. And finally, he went to the Marshal. Marshal took him in, and he told him, listen, Toiv Maisi Michaim, what's the point? This is what it's all about. Taka were goes on me to come back to life. The Gezaira was Kayam. When Hashemayim, they upheld your words. But, bottom line, was Eduzan. So it says there in the archives that the Marshal was mispal to the Rabbeinu Shloilom that on the town of Lublin should come a koyach of Shikho. Shikho means that they should forget the episode, and slowly but surely it should be erased from their mind. And the end of the story is written there clearly in the archives of Lublin that the forgetfulness and descended on the town of Lublin. Eventually his wife took him back into the house. He went back into shul and everybody sat on the same bench as him and they forgot what happened and he reintegrated into society. That was the koyach of a neder, which one should never play with, which the man said to his wife, and afterwards the koyach of Chazal to be mate neder, which was the koyach of the Marshal. If you give me one more minute, I'll tell you one more master which happened. Because this week's saddle starts off with the duah. Ish ki yidu neder l'Hashem. There was the neder, right? He started, then off the state to his wife. Yes, I promise. Remember? Now, the other one was, I'll tell you very briefly, I have 1 minute. I've got another 5 minutes. I got my bonus time. And Dudi's not here either. So, Bekitzer, there was a master, there was a man who was on his way. Could be you heard the story. I'll try and speed it up. On his way to the Catskills in America. And on his way to the Catskills, he was busy with his mobile on business, hahina, hair, and driving. And the way his mind took him, he forgot to check that his petrol gauge was not only on zero, but the little yellow light had already come on. But he was busy in this business, that business. End of the day, the car splatters, comes to a full stop. The only problem was that the area that he was particularly dangerous. There were places with thugs and addicts and gefährliche place. So what should he do? Sit in the car? It's Friday morning. He's not going to spend Shabbos in the car. Got out the car, went to the boot, opened up, saw a jerry can, empty one, and he's got to find the petrol station. As soon as he's 2-3 minutes onto the road, 3 shkutzim came, and they jumped on him. But viciously, one guy kicked him in the head, threw him down, and then started to take out the stuff from his pockets. Everything. His money, his wallet, his credit card, his phone. Mamish barobt, really took everything, ausgeleitet, like you say. But then there were 3 of them there, and one says to the other 2, listen guys, he's going to squeal to the pigs, so there's no point in leaving him. Let's finish him off. Guy took out a knife, and the other 2 are watching, picks up the knife, and he was going to finish him off. Suddenly from there was a grassland there. There was a boulder. From behind the boulder, scream comes out there. A huge colored man emerges from there. Amusai mochaitzi olkoi. Amu mochaitzi rochboi. Amu mochaitzi koi musoi. Ah, keine. He says, put down that knife before. But there were 3 of them. So he thought to himself, you know what? We'll stand our ground. In the Shvucha comes towards them, and one of the 3 and he started to bolt, and he ran. So he ran, so the Shvucha came over, and he started to run, and he was big, and he ran, he took him over, picked him up with one hand, and turned him over, smashed his head onto the ground. The guy was mamish. Achas tu soilomis. The other 2 saw, so they started to run, so he ran after them, and he could run. And they ran and took the 2 of them, one in one hand, one in the other hand, in het gemacht dort ein paden teuren, pow! Beide kept zusammen, 2 heads are better than 1. And there they are, but the other 2 were still conscious. The first one was mamish finished, but he was struggling. The other 2, and as he came to himself a bit, he's standing over them, he says, okay, guys, take it out of your pockets. What have you got? Give him back his money straight away. Took out from the pockets the money. He says, no, that's his money. Now take out your money. Oh, I was scared. Took out thousands of dollars. Was gegambled and geroped, and there was money. He says, now the telephones as well. Took out telephones. Give it to him. Give him back his phone. Give back his phone. You also, don't try to be a wise guy. Also, money. Okay. Finally finished. This man says to him, get out of here before I dismantle you both, limb from limb. Move! They ran. Put down that knife first. Put down the knife, and he ran. Now the fellow turns around to him quickly, says to him, you know, I owe you my life. How can I repay you? So he says to him, I watch what happened here. You haven't got any petrol, have you? You haven't got any gas. Let's go back to the car. He says, never mind that. You've got to get some. He says, I saw you come out of the car. Let's get the jerry can. Let's go. 7 minutes from here, 8 minutes walk, there's a gas station for you. Walk there. He says, it's a dangerous place. You don't go alone. I'm coming with you. And he walked there, filled up the gas, came back to the car, put it in, open the thing, start the car. It's full. Says, takes out $1,000. He says, let me give you something. Some appreciation. He says, why? He says, okay, let me ask you, why did you risk your life for me? There were three of them. What's the reason behind it? So he says to him, he leans on the car, he says, okay, here there's two stones, let's sit down and I'll tell you. Sat down on the stone, he says to me, a while ago, I was a junkie, big time. I was on the hard stuff, cocaine, heroin, work. I had nothing in my life except to lie on a bench in the park outside of New York, and every day people passed me. I lay there for hours and hours and hours. And you know what? After that, a man passed by every so often, and this man was sort of a rabbi with a beard, and he used to put $5 into my pocket. And then he passed by again every few days, and then he came, gave me another $10. And he whispered always in my ear, don't worry, things are going to get better. It doesn't always stay as bad as this. And this went on for weeks. Finally, after a while, he stopped coming. And I got up and I asked one of those Jewish guys with the hats, and I said to him, where's this fellow? And I said, which fellow? And I described to him, chubby, got sharp eyes and he's got beard. But kind man. Ah, that one. No. You're right. He died a couple of weeks ago. Whoa. And then I stood up and I said, if he had confidence in me, I'm taking an oath. Nadura. I'm taking a resolve. He believed in me. I am going to show him that he believed in me for a reason. And I went and I dried out in a rehabilitation place belonging to the city. 6 months I was there, cold turkey. And finally I emerged from there. I was ready to face the world again. And I was better. No more heroin, no more drugs. And I believed in the rabbi. He said, and you know what? I came out and then I was walking around this area over here just getting some air. I saw you come out with your beanie and the little couple that you wear on your head. And I thought, now I got a chance to give the rabbi something back. And I saw those guys and they jumped on you. And I thought, I'll show them. And that's why I came to your rescue. I don't want your money. I wanted to fulfill what I promised to myself, to the rabbi. The man was mamish, amazed. He says, do you know perhaps the name of this man who put the $5 and the $10 in your pocket? And the colored man stands up. He says, yeah. They called him Shlomo Kalabach. Kalabach. He was the man. Chaps.